All right, welcome back, guys. This is Yankees Unloaded. I'm Jake Ellenbogen. Joining me, as always, is Gary Sheffield Jr. And today we have a kind of surprise podcast for you guys, because you guys have known for, you know, as long as we've been alive, which is the last four episodes, Gary. We've gone, like, not every week, but that's really been the plan. But we did decide today, mainly because of this move, that this won't be the first and only time. This will be the start of something new. Each week we want to do kind of like a preview and almost like a summary of the previous week. And then we're going to have smaller shows in between. This is one of the smaller shows. John Berti is a Yankee. If you don't know who the heck that is, it's okay. That's why we're here. We're going to give it to you straight. We're going to tell you why we like this move, because Gary and I talked off air. We already know we're both on the same page here. But Gary, you said something really interesting off air. I said, you know, we got to just record right now. It, you know, this, you said this reminded you of when the Yankees went on and got DJ LeMahieu. And the reason you said that was because the Yankees have been really power oriented. So when they got LeMahieu, it was a little bit of a culture shock. Like, wait a minute, this isn't like our type of guy. Normally they go after, you know, power hitters. I'm with you on that, but it, you know, do you care to elaborate at all on that point?
Yeah, well, I mean, let's be clear. Power is the best, like, it's the best thing you can have. If you have guys who can drive the ball, put balls in the seats, that's ideal. It's what I want. It's what you want. It's what ultimately Brian Cashman wants. But this is the thing. If I'm thinking about what the Yankees have versus what they need, the Yankees need more contact. It's part of the reason why we brought in Alex Verdugo. Alex Verdugo was a great fit for this team. Now, he's not going to hit 335. He's not going to go win the batting title. He's going to put the ball in play. He's going to be a different flavor for this lineup. And it's the same thing with Berti. It's that most guys in this Yankees lineup are worried about driving the ball. They're not worried about their strikeout numbers. They're not worried about running the bases the same way that maybe an Anthony Volpe would. That's the reason why Volpe is such a good fit in this lineup and why we didn't trade him, is that fit. And so when you go bring in a guy who can play third base with Berti, I feel like the Yankees, and the only difference here between DJ LeMahieu and this pickup is that DJ LeMahieu had a few down years in Colorado, and the Yankees decided that they can go fix him. Well, Birdie's coming off essentially a career year. So I'm good with this pickup. I know technically there are other moves we could have made, like maybe a Matt Chapman since he didn't get a long-term deal. I'm sure there's other third basemen that people who are listening today would have rather had, but I think this pickup is going to be more impactful and less sexy.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's perfect that it happens when it does, but not surprising, because we actually alluded to the idea that while everyone is freaking out about, you know, starting pitcher, and it took you a little bit, but I think even you kind of accepted, you know what, these are our guys, and they'll evaluate at the trade deadline. They're not going to lose Cole for the rest of the year like we initially thought could happen. So now, really, what do you have left? Well, you look at the third base, and you're like, LeMahieu's out, Peraza's out. And now you start to look at a really quick, almost too quick approaching future of Oswaldo Cabrera starting at third. And that kind of scares the crap out of me. He did not have a great spring training like we talked about in our last episode.
And so no track record of success as well. Because Yankees right now are a 2024 team, which is something that we have hardly ever said, is that they're a short-term organization. Well, when you go get Juan Soto and you don't have him on an extension yet, the moves that you bring in, you have to have clarity over your starters at the very least. Whether or not you have depth, like, that's awesome. Starting rotation depth, that'd be great. But if you don't, if you flat out, and you brought it up last show, if you literally don't have a starting third base caliber guy over there, there's a problem.
Yeah.
And the Yankees have just accomplished that. Is it going to be a long-term option for the Yankees? I don't think we're worried about that, to be quite honest with you. Just the fact that in 2024, we have at least a short-term answer that will work, and we have clarity over what we're expecting in 2024. There were too many question marks with the organization, and I felt like they answered one today.
I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, the big reason why I was for going out and getting a contact bat and trading is because, you know, you laughed. We went over it at the end of our last show. Here are the guys available in third base. You have Gene Segura. You know, you have Longoria.
I like Tyler Wade.
Yeah, Tyler Wade. That was a great one. But no, so my father was like, we were talking about this afterwards, and I brought up Longoria, and he's like, he's still playing, and just cackled. Like,
oh, yeah. That,
those are your options if you don't go out and make a move like this. So let's not waste any time. Let's tell people what John Birdie is. He's got 2 years of control, which is great, Gary. For those of you who don't know, that means he does have an arbitration season next year. So that is kind of a little cool thing. He is 34 years old. People will be like, wait, you said that LeMahieu was too old. No. LeMahieu's not too old. It's that he's already showing that he can't stay healthy at this age. If you're 34 and 2 years ago you led the NL in stolen bases, which John Birdie did, and the speed hasn't dropped off and the contact hasn't dropped off and you're not chasing pitches, I'm not concerned about your age. We've seen guys play way longer. He hit 294 last year, Gary, in 2023. This is not like one of those signings where you go out and you get a guy. And we've seen him before. The Yankees are obsessed with going out and getting those utility guys that like hit 188. And you're like, why? He's 30 years old, hits 188. And you're like, what is the appeal here? There's a lot of appeal here. And what I will say, I don't know how things went down for the Marlins. What I will say is that I actually went back and looked, and John Birdie was expected to be the starting shortstop for the Marlins. Okay. That was the expectation. Right. I don't know what changed. I don't think this guy did anything crazy or anything like that to justify getting traded. I think, honestly, the Yankees had a need and they decided, hey, we're going to offer you this guy, John Cruz, good prospect, 28th overall, good prospect, hearing great things about him. And they wanted Cruz. They're like, all right, it's a deal. He's 34. Yeah, he's got 2 years of control. But we can get a 28th overall prospect who might be a little bit higher on our prospect grading. And then, you know, ends up being a three-team trade, which was really bizarre, with a rival in the Rays, and they take on Ben Roethlisberger. And the reason I say take on is because Yankees do not need him.
Goodbye.
And Ben Roethlisberger fills a need for them because they needed a backup catcher. So everyone wins, which is the whole point of a trade. And you're getting a versatile third, short, and second baseman. To me, he needs to start day one. He needs to start tomorrow against the Astros. And I'm going to take it a step further, Gary. I think he should be the leadoff bat. I want him leading off. He hit 294 last year. You're getting a guy with speed right out of the gate. Speed, contact, and a guy that can not only just like fast as a fielder, but he's fast on the base paths. And again, I mentioned led the NL in stolen bases 2 years ago, Gary. So you're getting a guy now that can threaten the base paths when you have Soto and Judge and Rizzo and Stan and Glaber all up. And that is a beauty of a move here, because it doesn't matter how long he is, you know, how long his stay is in New York. We've seen guys come in like a Matt Carpenter and just flourish right before our eyes. There's no reason to suspect that John Birdie is not going to be able to play in the Bronx. There's no reason to assume that. He's not a power hitter. Who cares? He's a contact bat. He can steal bases. And he should be leading off. Batting 294 last year. I mean, at worst, Gary, he's going to be hitting like 260. So,
okay. You know who I actually... So you really like this pickup. I love this pickup as well. But let me say this. I think I have a different perspective on his role. For one, I agree he should be starting. I don't think there's really any argument that a young player that really isn't that highly touted in our organization, we really don't have anyone at third base that is going to fill the role that we need them to fill. But having said that, if you look at just look at the games played for John Birdie, okay? Since 2018, when he started with Toronto, 4 games played. 73, 39, 85, 102, and 133. So this is obviously his workload has increased over time because baseball executives have essentially figured out that he's a really good player. He has an impact. His speed is having an even bigger impact in a game that's essentially going away from speed. And then this last year with the bigger bases, we've noticed speed started to come back into the game. It's having more of an impact. But having said that, and I said this about DJ LeMahieu and the fact that I don't expect him, and it's been proven right already, for him to play 162 games. That just wasn't going to happen. I don't think, matter of fact, that anyone had that expectation. So essentially what it meant was that we were an IKF short on the roster. We needed somebody who could be a utility man, someone who could play second base when Gleyber Torres needed a break, someone who could play third base if something happened to DJ LeMahieu. Well, something just happened to DJ LeMahieu, and I said I expect him to be good for about half the season, exactly what he was last year, because he's naturally, as a 34-year-old who's dealing with injuries, he's going to have ups and downs. So my expectation was that Birdie and DJ LeMahieu are essentially going to share time as the utility man all year, which is why my conclusion is that Anthony Volpe should be leading off for this organization. And the reason I say that is because when Birdie and DJ LeMahieu are taking turns, I don't want somebody to be at leadoff, and then now I have to put DJ LeMahieu at leadoff. I don't want roles changing, if that makes sense. I want Anthony Volpe to be doing the same thing all year. I want him protected by Juan Soto. I want him protected by Aaron Judge. I want him protected by Gleyber Torres and Anthony Rizzo. Our most prized possession, in my opinion, in this organization outside of our superstars, of course, Anthony Volpe, right? Anthony Volpe and Spencer Jones. So if I'm looking at that, I don't want him buried at 6 and 7 in the lineup. I want to put him in the fire, put Birdie down the lineup, allow him to be a professional hitter, give us depth. Him and Verdugo down the bottom of the lineup are going to do damage. So I'm honestly really happy with this pickup. I really am.
So I actually agree with you to an extent, which I know sounds weird because I was like, oh yeah, Birdie needs to be a leadoff hitter. And I still think he needs to if it's not Volpe. I've been saying, as you know, I've been saying I want Volpe to lead off. I just don't think they have the guts to do it. So in that sense, I think they still want to keep him at the bottom of the order. So
I respect that.
Yeah, I'm just kind of adjusting my vision. I'm like understanding, okay, Volpe's not going to lead off in all likelihood. Can we at least get Birdie? Because what I don't want to see is, oh, here comes Rizzo as the leadoff hitter or something.
Oh, for the love of God, we can't do a Schwarber. And trust me, this works for Kyle Schwarber, and all the power to him, right? He's going to lead the league in walks. He's going to hit homers. I get that mentality. I really do. I understand it. You give them more at bats, allows them to commit more damage. I got it. The issue is that when you got a guy who physically can go steal you 50 or 60 bases, that's in Anthony Volpe's toolbox. He 100%. Has the ability to go be a Trey Turner type player, a Trey Turner type asset. If Anthony Volpe lives up to his potential, this is potentially a 110 to 120 run guy.
Absolutely.
It's a superstar in the making. Now, does it mean that Volpe will be a superstar? Absolutely not. But given the fact that the Yankees protected him the way they did in the trade market, I cannot possibly figure that you're going to hide him 7 through 9 in the lineup in 2024. I just can't see it.
So we talked about in the last episode, they needed to do this move. They needed to make this move. Not necessarily Birdie. I don't think we realized that he was available, but they needed to make this type of move because they're behind the eight ball. I mean, you look long-term, what is their option? I think a lot of the reason, I might be butchering his name, it might have either Andrew Hall or Anthony Hall. One of their top, you know, within the last 3-4 years, they draft him in either the first or second round.
Anthony Hall.
Yeah, he was supposed to be their third base guy, and he suffered some injuries, and now they're moving him to the outfield, it looks like. And then, you know, we talked about how, you know, they're moving a prospect or two to try them out at third, and it just kind of shows you they didn't really have a concrete plan. Peraza was never a third baseman in my eyes. You know, he was more of a second short guy, maybe even learn the outfield, whatever. I never looked at him as a third base guy. They didn't really look at him as a third base guy. So he was, if you think about that for a second, DJ LeMahieu is kind of like, oh, thank God he's still around, right? But then he gets hurt. So then it's like, oh, Peraza. Well, we have him. He's our backup to our backup option. And then your backup to your backup to your backup option is Oswaldo Cabrera, who doesn't walk. I mean, you and I walk more than he does. And it strikes out a ton. And his chase rate is awful. So then you look at a guy like John Birdie who comes in, who you have 2 years of control with. And according to Baseball Savant, these are the things that stand out to me. 89th percentile base running run value, which is great. 67 fielding run value, which is fine. Extra base, XBA, excuse me, 87 percentile, right? 88 percentile chase percentage, 79th percentile win whiff percentage, 74th percentile K percentage. He's got 89th percentile in range and 95th in sprint speed. Now, he doesn't have a great arm, which is okay, because we had actually talked about in our last episode, you had brought it up. You are throwing further from short than you are from third. So that's a good thing. His sweet spot percentage at ninth, 10th hard hit percentage, 14th barrel, second exit velo. That's just not him. And that's okay. I don't really care. You know what you're getting with him. He's not going to be hitting 30 home runs.
However, would you say he ranked in terms of running?
Like just sprint speed?
Yes.
95th percentile.
So, ladies and gentlemen, when you have a guy that can hit for average and he's 95th percentile in foot speed in all of Major League Baseball, and you had a designated hitter who essentially stopped running from third to home last year because he's so beaten up, is essentially what happened. Okay. We literally have players on our team that were so beaten up that they can't round third base and score when he frankly should have easily scored. Or you can argue should have never been sent because of his physical condition. Anytime you can see that on your roster, and then there's a pickup out there that is essentially the opposite. Now, that doesn't mean that I think that Giancarlo is a bad player. I don't think that. I think it's redundant to go get players of the same stature, to go get players that are trying to do the same thing. And Brian Cashman's criticized. He's going to be criticized by us often. This channel will criticize him often. But another thing this channel will do is give him credit when it's due. We gave him credit for Alex Verdugo. We gave him credit for Juan Soto. We're going to give him credit right now for making a pickup that wasn't sexy, making a pickup that we did not expect this. No. And this is a pickup where you don't look at the Yankees getting Birdie out. Is not the same thing as getting a Giancarlo Stanton out or an Aaron Judge out. Because a lot of times when you watch the Yankees, and this is my biggest problem with this offense, is that everybody seems to get out the same way. And coming into 2024, I think people are underrating the fact that you can no longer pitch each hitter the same way. That's different. We didn't see that last year. We didn't see it in any year prior, even the years that our offense was actually considered really good. For the most part, we just had a bunch of redundant, successful hitters. And then once someone figured us out, we got out all in the same way. The same way we all hit home runs together, we all went down together. So now this team comes in. Birdie, Verdugo, Soto, Judge, Rizzo, all grinder at-bats. Totally different mentality, totally different approach coming into the baseball season. We're short in pitching, but we are much better offensively. I think our entire mentality is, at the very least, considering analytics and then putting together a baseball team while considering those analytics. Instead of building a baseball team solely based off analytical data, I think the fact that we're making pickups like Verdugo, we're making pickups like Birdie, I think it proves that this organization is finally considering data instead of relying on it.
I agree. I think that's that is a key piece. I think there are two other key pieces here. Well, one we have to bring up that we talked about in our last show. You don't have to make this move. And I'm not trying to, you know, be negative now. You don't have to make this move if you bring back IKF. But in some aspects, and I'm a huge IKF fan, but in some aspects, Birdie is better. And it's not remotely close. I mean, 294 last year, IKF is not batting 294. He's batting around 260, 270, which is good, right? But the stolen bases, IKF isn't as fast as Birdie.
Right. The reason IKF made the money that he made is that they're both good fielders, but IKF's floor is probably higher. Okay. The ceiling's lower
too.
Yes. His floor is higher. His ceiling is lower. So that's essentially where the value comes in from IKF, and rightfully so. He's a valuable asset. But I agree. This is very much an IKF signing without giving up, what was it, $30 million or $15 million, whatever he got? So
yeah,
we'll take that.
Oh, I'll hit you with something else because, you know, I had to be prepared. Spotrac, our friends over at Spotrac, they calculate market value. I always love this, right? Mm-hmm. So Birdie is actually calculated as an underpaid infielder by $5 million per year.
Wow, he should sign with Scott Boras.
Well,
if he really wants to get underpaid, you might as well go the whole way.
Yeah, I mean, good God. But yeah, I thought that market value was interesting. Shout out to Spotrac for having market value for a player that's already signed. You know, normally you don't see that. But yeah, they have him. So he's getting, it's 2 years. It was like 2 years, $5 million, I think it is. It's something around that. Yeah, so
that's great for us.
Awesome. So he signed 2 years, $5.73 million, but they think that he should be a 2 year, $14 million player.
Right. So a utility man. I mean, that's about what a utility man gets paid. And for the Yankees, I would expect Birdie's going to play anywhere from 100 to 115 games this year. I know last year he played, I think it was $140.
I would not be surprised. If he ends up being, first off, the best pure hitter on the Yankees as far as average, I wouldn't be surprised. I also wouldn't be surprised if we don't see LeMahieu again. I have a really bad feeling about LeMahieu. Yeah, I've been saying it. You know, I've been saying it. This stuff just doesn't, it does not get better with time. And the thing with Birdie that is a good signal is that, okay, yeah, he's 34 years old, but he's shown no sign of slowing down athletically. That's the thing. Once you start showing, okay, foot injury here and, you know, a back injury, like that stuff gets worse. Birdie has yet to really show that. And last year, he played a career high 133 games, the year prior 102, 85, 39, 73, and 4. So, this is somebody that is now being counted on. Now, the stolen bases went down from, you know, when he was 32 at, you know, age 32 in 2022, he had 41, led the NL, and then this past year, 16. But I think also, like, that's just the way maybe they want to utilize him. I mean, it's not necessarily him. So I don't know. I feel like this is, he's going to be a fan favorite. I mean, if you guys went crazy for Ronald Torres, then you're going to go crazy for
Wait a minute. How old was Greg Allen?
He must have been in his 30s, I would assume.
There we go. If Greg Allen, do you guys remember how much of an impact he had on our lineup? He just got in the lineup and he was running the bases. Crowd was going wild. Yeah, so he was 31. Not an impact player in any stretch of the imagination. No one was excited to hire Greg Allen. Nobody.
You're not excited for .217 batting average?
Right. So he hit .217. Okay. Obviously, everyone knows him as a speed guy. And he had a huge impact. Now, I'm not saying that Birdie's going to take the world by storm. I don't think that's the case, but here's one thing I do know. If he's 34 and he doesn't have it, so let's just say he has a good year this year, helps the Yankees. Yankees get to the ALCS, get eliminated. And then next year, you see a third baseman on the market. The Yankees haven't tied their hands together to go get him. They essentially gave up nothing. So it's a risk-free move, and it is a way better option than anything else that they had. I think that's like the way I can wrap that up, is that no young player that's at third base right now that's battling injury or sitting on the sidelines and hoping for more playing time, none of those guys are more proven heading into 2024 than John Birdie. So having said that, when you can go acquire a player like that and you're going to pay him a total, did you say it was $7 million over the course of 2 years?
That's what his market value was.
Oh, so what's he getting paid?
He's literally getting paid two. It's 2 years, $5.73 million.
Oh yeah, see, that's a we're paying those young players $500K.
Yeah.
He's essentially getting paid like a young player. We'll take that. I will take that.
So Baseball Reference has the projections again. We love those. We talked about that with Heal.
I'm sure those will pan out for us.
Yeah. So age 34 season for Birdie, they're projecting a 257 batting average this season, a 703 OPS, 95 strikeouts, 40 walks, 8 home runs, 3 triples, 104 hits, 55 runs in 452 plate appearances, and they expect his stolen bases to go up to 25 this year. I think that's a fair projection. I would say 271 batting average. That's my expectation for him. I think it'll stay a little bit above 270. I like the 25 stolen bases. Part of me feels like the Yankees, they kind of exhibited this early on last year. We brought it up before, you know, with Anthony Volpe, who was like among the league leaders at the beginning of the year, and then they just stopped stealing bases. I think they're going to go back to that. And I think they told us that when they went out and got Verdugo, and they went out now and they got Birdie. It's like they care about small ball now, you know, and maybe they didn't have, they did, but they're trying to work their way back, and I'm all for it. I like this move. I think this will pan out for them. I think he's going to be a fan favorite. I don't even want to know what John Sterling is going to say when he hits a home run. The birdie is the wordy. I can already picture it.
Seems about right.
Yeah, but no, I feel good about this one, man. I feel good about this, man. I really feel like this, you know, we're going to come back to this and be like, damn, this was a really nice, high quality pickup that doesn't have a big name. And another thing I'll say is that you see Yankees Twitter and they're ablaze because they're like, well, we need this big name guy. We're all in, yada, yada. It's like, okay, but can you at least do some work? Can you at least look up the player before you start spouting your comments? I understand everyone's opinions, you know, are fair, whatever. Make your opinion. You have the right to that. But you also have the right to look this stuff up. It takes 2 seconds to go on Google, type in John Birdie, and figure out whether he's a good player or not, and whether you should be yelling about it in a good way or a bad way. And I feel like there's too many that are just looking at the name like, oh, good God, John Birdie, that's the best we can do. Yes. And it's a very good move. And like right before the season, what do you expect? All these teams have their lineups already figured out. This is a shock to me that the Marlins traded away a guy who was going to start for them. So I don't know about you, but like, I totally like this. I think this makes a lot of sense. And I think we'll be looking back on this, you know, come trade deadline when they don't go out and acquire that third base bat that, you know, they probably would have had to do, pay a premium for. Instead, they'll be like, oh, we have John Birdie. He's batting 270. You know, he's our starting third baseman. We feel good about him. I mean, what do you want to do? Do you want to go out and have Josh Donaldson come out of retirement? No.
Yeah, well, here's the case for John Birdie, or not John Birdie, even a pickup on a budget at third base, right? And not on a budget where you just throw someone over there, right? You just throw someone over there that you don't really have any expectation for him to do anything, okay? And John Birdie does, which is what we just spent the first 28 minutes and 30 seconds talking about. However, these same people who want the sexy pickup, and trust me, I wanted Yamamoto, right? I thought Matt Chapman potentially could have been a fit. Now, having said all that, when you do go get those pickups, if you did go get a Yamamoto, maybe not Yamamoto, but let's go say Matt Chapman, and you want the guy who's proven platinum gold glove winner. The issue with that is that if the New York Yankees are sitting 2.5-3 games back at the deadline, the Yankees aren't going to feel compelled to have the financial flexibility to go acquire one of those starters. Let's use Shane Bieber as a perfect example, who's the player I think the Yankees are going to acquire at the deadline. Now, when Shane Bieber, if he ever potentially became a Yankee, the only way that that happens is if the sexy pickup didn't just occur. Okay. We weren't going to get Shane Bieber if Yamamoto came through the door. We weren't going to go get Shane Bieber if Matt Chapman had a $30 million a year option for 2025. We have to re-sign Juan Soto. So all these different type of budgets, like all these things that you know are in the Yankee short-term plans and long-term plans, you cannot possibly go get the sexy pickup now and then later on at the deadline think that this organization is going to be aggressive. And then now that Gerrit Cole's hurt, the Yankees have an opportunity to fill a role in which they just did, and we expect them to be in the hunt at the deadline. Once that happens, the Yankees can go make a trade that's not going to cost them the money that essentially is going to mortgage us out of bringing Juan Soto back or bringing Gleyber Torres back. So the Yankees are not just deciding, do we always go get the sexy player? They're deciding when to go get the sexy player, because if you do it now all the time, we're going to get bit. Okay. Oh, everyone always says, why did this organization get rid of that superstar? Why'd they do that? But then you look two off seasons ago and they went and got the sexy pickup 2 years ago and it cost them now. So the Yankees, I think, and you can have an argument for a separate day of whether or not they can afford both. I think you can make that argument, but based on what I think the Yankees are doing, I think the Yankees are filling a hole and leaving flexibility for when they need it. And I think at the deadline, when Gerrit Cole is finally getting his footing, he's back on the mound, maybe that's going to be a shot in the arm in itself. Then you go bring in potentially a Shane Bieber or someone else at the top of the rotation, and you hope that Rodon or Nestor Cortez bounce back, and then at that point, you're dangerous. So I actually really like what Brian Cashman did, and this is coming from somebody who's criticized Cashman left and right. The difference is I'm fair, and I'm trying to be fair here, and I believe being fair, John Birdie and what they did with the rest of this roster in terms of their lineup, I'm very happy.
I'm with you, man. I'm definitely with you there. And I think really we tried to be fair to what the Yankees were doing. And really, I think it just goes back to the fact you and I have been saying over and over again, it's to take care of now, evaluate the deadline. You can always make a move at the deadline. You know, and for those of you wondering, why did they wait until the deadline? Were they running out of time? Because that is the time to trade. That is when you're going to get those deals done. That's when teams are going to... No team is really trying to trade before the deadline. They're trying to trade their players at the deadline when they have peak value before, you know, when that window closes and all of a sudden a team's willing to overpay. See how much you love my prospect when the last 5 minutes are on the board for the trade deadline.
Yeah, and that's also when people are letting go of the rope. I mean, Some organizations are like, do we go for it or do we not? And then that's teams like the Milwaukee Brewers are sitting around saying, well, we've got Devin Williams, and obviously he just got hurt. But around the deadline, if the Brewers are out of the race, that's when other teams are going to look at Devin Williams and say, well, are the Brewers going to, they're going to crap, or are they going to get off the pot? And the chances are they're going to get off the pot and give up an asset. So that's why people wait to the deadline. And I think right now, opportunistically, The Yankees would be best off doing that.
So the Yankees end up with John Birdie, who is going to, well, his nickname here says Birdman. I've never heard anybody call him that.
But I'm not calling him that.
I'm not calling him that either. I'm not calling him Birdie is the wordy either, but I sure... I don't know if I hope or hope not that John Sterling says that. I feel like he's going to. I feel like that's like the obvious. That's like the layup one, you know? But yeah, that's going to do it for this shorter episode, which is still a little bit long, but we wanted to give you guys something here. I mean, Gary and I were both really pumped about this move because it's not necessarily about the player. It's about what this really signals. It's that they're willing to go for it. They are all in because they're not sitting there saying, nope, Oswaldo Cabrera is good enough. At the same time, though, flexibility, you know, giving them that flexibility financially and just being able to reevaluate, you know, come trade deadline. I mean, that to me is what this is all about. And I think he's going to end up being a fan favorite. I think he's going to be clutch for them in key spots. And I would love to see a lineup full of guys that just make contact and get on base and, you know, force walks and, you know, steal bases and, I don't know. I think this is going to work out well, and I think it's going to help Soto and Judge out, because now you'll have the pressure of him on base while you're trying to pitch to two of the best hitters in baseball. But
yeah, and message sent to DJ LeMahieu and our young players, wasn't it?
That, well, message yeah. Sent. That, absolutely. So that's all I got for you guys. I'm Jake Allen Bogan. You can follow me at JK Bogan. You can follow Gary at Gary Sheffield Jr. We will be back next week with a kind of recap of, you know, the rest of, I don't know, the weekend and what have you. Maybe we'll do a show in between now and then. Who knows? But expect us back next week and, you know, another show like this in the middle of next week. So appreciate you guys as always. And we'll see you guys soon. Later, and folks.
Subscribe.